Motorcycle Club and members of area police and fire departments. Army Sergeant Terrence Hinton died in a military truck crash in Hawaii last May. National Guard spokesman Mike Chrisman says Bierbrot had never met Cayley, but volunteered after he thought how much such a gesture would mean to his four children. In sports, college basketball, Marquette snapped a four-game losing streak with an 88-85 victory over Seton Hall. Checking the sports schedule in the NHL tonight, Dallas is at Chicago. Now the forecast from the National Weather Service. Cloudy skies today, a high of 21. The normal high for this time of year is 31. A winter storm warning goes into effect at 9 tonight. It'll stay in place until 6 tomorrow night. Snow developing around 9 and picking up speed. The heaviest will fall between midnight and 6 tomorrow morning. Forecasters say an inch an hour is not out of the question. Total snow accumulation in the 7 or 8 inch range. In the afternoon, there's the possibility of some lingering snow along with patchy blowing snow. Tomorrow's high, 24. Right now, we've got cloudy skies on the eastern end of our listening area. Sunshine on the western end. A temperature reading in Kenosha of 8 above. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is coming up.
Support for the Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today marks the monthly visit of Nan Calvert to the Morning Show, and I could not be more pleased with the guest that she has brought with her, none other than the Honorable Mayor of the City of Racine, Corey Mason. Corey Mason's voice has been heard on the Morning Show before, actually most recently, for some wonderful sort of actuality reports that he gave from the most recent Democratic presidential convention. And we had actualities, I think, nearly every weekday morning while Mr. Mason was there in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. But this is our first opportunity to speak with Corey Mason since his inauguration back on November 7th as the mayor of Racine. And, of course, many of you know that before that he had served citizens of southeastern Wisconsin in the state legislature. So one of the things we want to talk with him about is some of the ways in which his life has changed quite drastically, what it feels like to be serving the citizens of Racine now as their mayor versus as a legislator headquartered in Madison. And of course, we also want to explore some of the very specific issues and challenges that confront Racine, and particularly some that are very much related to our environment, which I know is one of the reasons Nan Calvert wanted Mayor Mason to be with us today. So, Mayor Corey Mason and Nan Calvert, we welcome both of you to the Morning Show today.
Thank you so much.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. So, Mr. Mason, you have undergone a change that your counterpart in Kenosha can certainly identify with, John Antaramian, who, of course, served in the state legislature before shifting his attention to becoming mayor of Kenosha, and recently becoming mayor of Kenosha, of course, again, after stepping away from the office for a few years. Say a word about this change and what it has felt like, and maybe the changes that have maybe caught you by surprise, if any of them.
Yeah, again, thanks for having me. So, I mean, it is a great honor to be able to serve my hometown as its mayor. I mean, Racine is home, it's family. My family's been there now for, my kids are the sixth generation to be born and raised in Racine from our family. So, you know, Racine is just really, to me, it's really my favorite place in the world. And so I'm so thrilled to be there. And so, you know, you prepare for the job in a number of ways, but you know, as you mentioned, you know, Mayor Antaramian was previously a state legislator, and Jim Cruiser was previously a state legislator. In fact, he was the Democratic leader my first term in the legislature. And so there are many things about the job of being mayor that being a legislator for more than a decade really prepares you for, in terms of understanding what are the sources of revenue that the city depends upon as they come from the state and federal government, where the places that you should go asking for resources, you know, already having a built-in relationship with cabinet secretaries and other state agencies from years and years of work. I was in a meeting this week where we were revisiting some of the work that was done a decade ago when they expanded I-94 then, and sort of some of the same labor standards that were used then. So you start with a base of knowledge that is really helpful. A former Republican colleague of mine, Dean Crawford, is now the mayor of Neenah. And so we go to these meetings with other mayors. There's sort of a common experience that mayors who were previously legislators have with one another. So it helps inform the job substantially. It puts you in a position where you can hit the ground running and have less of a learning curve in some ways. In other ways, you know, you can't really expect it or prepare for it until you're in it and you're there. But it is it has overall served me very well to be able to have that experience as a legislator moving into becoming the city's mayor.
Right. I think a lot of people would say that, for instance, Mayor Antaramian has been able to make things happen on behalf of the city of Kenosha because he has these strong connections with Madison. And I suspect you hope, at least to some extent, that that's going to be possible for you as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think what John has been able to, what Mayor Antaramian has been able to do with Kenosha, and again, sort of leveraging brownfield funds, you know, the work that he's done around TID financing and other things, those are pieces of legislation that, as a legislator, that I got to work on. So it's sort of an interesting transition, because as a legislator, you're setting statewide policy and voting on statewide policy. As a mayor, you're then called on to implement those policies. So because I've had a decade to sort of see what those policies are, some for good, some for ill, but nonetheless, now you're in a position to actually apply those policies at the state level or at the city level that were set by the state and federal government. And so it's different, but it's also much more exciting. I mean, I'll give you, there's a lot of discussion around redevelopment, around the lakefront, around the riverfront, and what that will look like. And as a legislator, I was very much involved in sort of, you know, TIF financing bills or waterfront restoration efforts. And even as a legislator, I was a big advocate for those things happening in Racine. But part of the reason I wanted to run for mayor is just sort of this realization that, you know, if you want to set broad policy on redevelopment, you should be a state legislator. But if you want to move the ball forward on redevelopment happening in your city, that's really the mayor's job. And so when the position opened up for this special election, it really struck me as a great opportunity to try to do some things on the ground and in the real world that I've been talking about from a policy perspective for more than a decade.
Mm. I wonder if you'd feel comfortable sharing with our listeners what you were sharing with Nan and I before we went on the air about sort of the sense of accessibility that people have with you and this sense of openness that people will have about sharing with you even the most sort of personal details about their personal lives and difficulties and challenges.
Yeah, I mean, people still share, and I've always prided myself on being accessible, whether, you know, it's at Wilson's coffee shop or in the grocery store or wherever. I mean, people still come up and talk to you and want to let you know what they think about, almost anything. I mean, really, I mean, the things that people are willing to share with you is it's just really, it's one of the great things about democracy, right? People should be able to approach people. I think the difference is, you know, in the legislature, they would have periods of time where it was very busy when they were in session, but then they have periods of time when they weren't in session. So it was easier to be more accessible in the community. As a mayor, the big transition is it's just, frankly, it's a lot more work than being a legislator. As a legislator, the work ebbs and flows and can get very, very busy at times, but then it slows down at other times. The work of being a mayor really never stops. I mean, it's just, you know, things happen around the clock, whether it's with public safety or snow plows or whatever is going to happen. Suddenly, you're much more acutely aware of, you know, there's that phrase, the city never sleeps. I mean, it's sort of, so when you're the mayor, it has a different intensity and pace to it that you hope still makes you as accessible as you once were. And you want people to feel like they can access you as quickly as possible. But just the number of calls or emails or requests for meeting that you get as a mayor versus a legislator is just so much more substantial. And so adjusting to all that has been a challenge, and trying to figure out how to prioritize that has been an adjustment, to say the least.
You were telling us that, for instance, this what is looking to be a major snow event that's on its way, that's going to be striking southeastern Wisconsin pretty ferociously in the overnight hours. Now, as mayor, of course, you see an event like that through different eyes,
right,
and with a kind of a new understanding. So, for instance, what is going on? Who is scurrying behind the scenes even today in preparation for this huge snowfall that we are expecting to have experience tonight and tomorrow morning?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how you look at it is much different. I mean, I still have to look at, okay, how long is it going to take me to shovel the driveway, whether you're a legislator or a mayor? But, you know, before I might think, well, what are the roads going to be like if I have to drive to Madison? And now it's conversations with Public Works and learning already what the Public Works Department does. Sometimes they lay brine or a salt mix on the street ahead of time, just anticipation of the snow to help it melt. They take temperature readings of the streets at different times to determine what strategy they're going to employ when they go to plow the streets. Temperature comes into that. Moisture comes into that. I'm learning more about snow and snow plows and really have a new appreciation for the work that our Public Works Department does to serve the community so that they can continue to move around as safely as possible. So you see things in a whole new way when that happens. And you're concerned for people's safety in a more acute way when you hear about those things. And, you know, when I was a legislator, I got almost no calls about snow plows. As a mayor, you get lots of calls about snow plows and snow removal. So it's an adjustment, and you're learning that there's new and exciting ways to think about the work that our government does to serve the public versus, you know, local level versus state level. It's just different, and it's closer to the people. You know, the city government is the most tangible form of government for people. So as a legislator, you might get calls about big, you know, statewide policy around the environment or around school funding formula. But, you know, at the local level, you'll get calls about garbage pickup and snow removal and potholes and, you know, community centers and things that directly impact people's lives. Because at the city level, that's where people are going to contact government directly. It really is at that local level. So it's more visceral. It's more tangible for people.
Right. I wanted to be sure to take just a minute or two to ask you about something that I've just, on a very personal level, been very curious about and also frustrated about, and that is, what is the city's relationship to when it comes to the matter of renovation of roads, road construction, in terms of what happens, when it happens, and where it happens, and how it happens? Is the city, does it depend on what we're talking about in terms of city streets versus
Is it a state highway? Is it a county road? Is it a city street? That all comes into play with one another. So, you know, there are a number of people sort of like, hey, what's going on with all the highway construction on Highway 31? That was a question that came up a bit last year before I took office. But,
right, or like, why are all of these things happening at the
same
time?
Right. And, I mean, it is one of the challenges we have is we have multiple jurisdictions just east of the eye. There's seven of them, but you're going to have, you know, the state has its own highways, the county has its own road work to do, and then the city has its work to do within the city limits. So we don't do that road work. You know, if you're basically east of 31 anywhere, that's not going to, or west of 31 anywhere, that's not going to be the city, unless it's for the water utility work. Then it's us putting water utility out. Pretty much, you know, everything east of the eye is covered by the Racine Water Utility and Wastewater Utility. So we have some infrastructure to do there. What we try to do, whether it's a state highway or a county highway or just a local city street, is if there are water infrastructure needs that need to go into place, we time that at the same time so that you're not putting in a new road and then 2 years later saying, oh, we're going to have to dig it all up and put in a new water main. The idea is that as we're replacing our roads, we're doing it together. But there is always the challenge of how do you jurisdictionally coordinate these things a little bit better. It will only get more intense as Foxconn comes along and rebuilds a number of, you know, KR is going to get substantially widened. Brown Road, which is this quiet little two-lane road in Racine County, is going to get very, very busy, as will Highway 11 and Highway 20. And even traffic coming in Kenosha County is going to be used as an exit for the construction as they're adding a lane to I-94. And so we're just in a meeting earlier this week with multiple jurisdictions about, are there some projects that we might have to delay for a little bit that are further east so that people can still move north and south as moving east and west becomes more challenging. I think it is hard for people to imagine just the scale of the project that's coming to the area, and it will no doubt lead to some frustrations about mobility and how people get in and out of town.
Right. We'll certainly return to that in just a moment or two, and I'm anxious to bring Nan in to pose some questions related to that. Before we turn to that, I do want to also ask you about something that you brought up as we were talking before we went on the air, namely that for all the work that you did in Madison, really none of that work could possibly prepare you for what you had to confront as mayor with the recent police shooting, which of course was a very difficult moment for the city collectively, and certainly for you and others in the Racine City government and associated with the police department. Really, really painful situation, very, very difficult, to say nothing, of course, of those directly impacted. I wonder, first of all, very specifically, what did you see as your own role, both personally and officially, in confronting that situation, and what do you see as your role taking the city forward from here?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, certainly there were things about being a legislator, as I mentioned, that prepare you well for being mayor, but there was nothing about being a legislator that can prepare you for an event where you've got an officer involved shooting. You know, you've got a family that's grieving the loss of their son. You've got two officers involved who I know the city and their families are very happy that they made it home safely. And so the one interaction I did have with it as a legislator is passing a bill that says, look, if there's an officer involved shooting, there really should be another jurisdiction. DOJ should come in and do the investigation. And that was a moment where, well, I'm really glad I helped to pass that legislation, because it really puts the city, for both the police and the community members who are wondering, is there going to be a full, fair, and an independent investigation that's happening? The answer is yes. We're going to have a Department of Criminal Investigations comes down from Madison, from the State Department of Justice. They're conducting the investigation now. And that's really important to have that transparency, that independence. But as it happened, it raised a lot of questions in people's minds. People wanted me to give them answers that I couldn't provide, because there's an independent investigation occurring separate from the city, as it should. And they'll reach their findings and share them with the Racine District Attorney, and she'll make a determination about what to do about it. We have a police force that has behaved under a lot of stress in this, and the Chief of Police, Art Howell, has done a lot of work to reach out to the community and have conversations about what their concerns might be. And he's got to lead, you know, 200 people on a police force who have to worry about making sure they get to go home safely every night. And so those are things that occur. We made the decision shortly after it happened to hold a town hall meeting and let people have just a conversation, as we do at the beginning of most city council meetings, where we'll let anybody talk for 3 minutes and sort of say their piece. And so we did a similar thing shortly the Monday after the shooting. So this is 5 days later, and we, you know, the family the deceased was there and invited in, and we had private conversations with them ahead of time. They got to say their piece about how they were feeling about things, but then the broader community got to come and talk about their concerns about living in the community and how they feel their interactions with the police go more broadly. So it was an instructive conversation. It was a hard conversation. There was a lot of intense feelings that people had about it. But you were asking about sort of the accessibility of being mayor. I mean, one of the things that I did this meeting jointly with Alderman Tate and other members of the council, but we wanted to provide a venue so that people could feel like they were heard. And that was really important. I know some of the people there were frustrated that we couldn't give answers about what was happening with the investigation, but, you know, people need to feel like their voices is being heard, and that's what we've tried to provide. You know, and a number of issues have come up in terms of everything from body cameras to police relations to our community policing philosophy that we have in Racine, where we've got historically low crime rates. So broadly, we have a really good model of policing in the city of Racine, but it's imperfect too. And so you hear the community come forward and express their very real feelings and interactions with it, and you use that to inform you moving forward, and hope that that's the beginning of a conversation and not the end of one.
I've heard some people say that I mean, for as painful as this situation has been, the fact that it has unfolded the way it has is at least in part an indication of actually how relatively positive the relationship has been between the Racine Police Department and the African American community, that in other cities where similar things occur, you have eruptions of anger and frustration that lead to rioting and all kinds of. It can feel even different, go farther than it actually has in Racine. Is that your interpretation too? That it's a relatively healthy situation.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say about the situation now is, you know, emotions are very raw and exposed for the police officers who protect and serve our community every day, for the family and that's involved in this situation. And so I don't want to sugarcoat it and make it sound like, oh, things are all just great and Racine, nothing to see here, no room for improvement.
Yeah, move along.
Let's move along here. But I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge this comes after decades of a community policing philosophy where we have these cop houses, we have several of them throughout town, where we have a philosophy of engaging the police and embedding the police into the community, whether it's in our schools or whether it's in our neighborhoods, so that the community is more familiar with our police department. And that comes on the heels of decades of investment and hard work in a policing philosophy that is more engaged than it might be in other jurisdictions. Again, I mean, I'm somebody who believes in continuous improvement and in all ways, but particularly I don't want to make it sound as though things are perfect, because they're not. And if you heard some of the angst and frustration at that town hall meeting, you would get that loud and clear that for some people it appears that everything is just fine, but for other people they feel differently about it. And so you've got to take that into consideration. But you know, it's how your community interacts with the police force is one of the most important things that a city has to confront. And so if there's ways that we can improve, we want to figure out what those are, but also want to acknowledge that there's some good work that has been done in the community. And, you know, we're at historically low crime rates, and that is in no small part to the men and women who serve our community every day in uniform, and to a philosophy that's been invested in engaging in the community for a long time.
For those of you just joining us, for the morning show today, it is the monthly visit of Nan Calvert, and we are very honored to have with us Corey Mason, the mayor of Racine. Let's turn our attention to some issues that maybe relate to the environment. You've already brought up Foxconn, and Nan, please begin joining in here. Mr. Mason, you did vote yes.
I did.
For the Foxconn project. Do you still feel good about that vote? Do you still, at least in general, feel good about the entrance of Foxconn to Southeast Wisconsin?
I do. It was an historic vote. Is it the bill that I would have crafted? Are there things that I would have liked to have seen different about environmental protections and some of the other things that were in there? Absolutely. Would I like to have seen more local hire provisions actually realized in the legislation? Absolutely. But, you know, as somebody who's been knocking on doors in Racine for going on 12 years now, what you hear over and over again from people is, you know, when are these middle-class jobs coming back, right? And, you know, Racine, for 26 years, you know, year to year, has unfortunately led the state in unemployment as a city. It's a distinction that I would frankly like to see go away. And so it is hard for me to envision any other opportunity that would be as substantial to get people back to work, to get people back into the middle class with, you know, decent middle class wages and the pride of building something again, you know. So, you know, made in America, it was, you know, I mean, we're all from, you know, Racine and Kenosha, and, you know, the whole Buy American, and, you know, this is the first decade in over 100 years where there aren't cars made in Wisconsin anymore, right? And so we've lost a lot of manufacturing jobs, and this is a unique opportunity, and maybe a singular opportunity, where you might see as many as 11,000 construction jobs to build the facility, and then 13,000 people employed, and then there are various estimates on how many more jobs might come with that, with supply chain, with service industry. So it is something that people need. And when I think about sort of what people struggle with and what they need, I mean, there is, in my opinion, no government program that can substitute for a good family-supporting job. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity to bring potentially tens of thousands of those to the area and get people back to work, it's what I've been talking about my entire tenure as a legislator. And so are there things I would have liked to have seen go differently with the way the bill was drafted? Sure. And there are things that we will continue to ask about as we're here. But I spend a lot of time already in my now 3 months as mayor having workforce preparation conversations about how are we going to get people the skills they need to work there, to build it, to work there, to be an employee. And those are exciting conversations to have. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went from a conversation of what jobs are people going to be able to do, to having a conversation of how are we going to get people trained to do all the jobs that are coming to the area. And that's, and not just any jobs. They're not minimum wage jobs. These are jobs that are going to pay on average $53,000 a year. And so that's a remarkable change. And, you know, if you walk around the neighborhoods of Racine, you know, you can see where the factories used to be, right? They're either shuttered or they've been cleared altogether. You know, I worked a couple summers at Jacobson on the south side of, you know, that's an empty field now, right? At the end of Durand Avenue, you can see where, you know, the Case factory used to be. And, you know, there's a lot of places you can sort of drive around in Racine and almost have sort of an aching, sort of missing limb feeling about, gosh, that's where thousands of people went to work when I was a kid. And now it's an empty field or a shuttered building. The opportunity for tens of thousands of people to get to work and have the dignity of work in their life again and be able to provide for their family is really important. And I can't stress enough how important I think that's going to be for the city and for the whole region.
Nan, do you have some questions you want to ask related to that?
I do. One of the things that many of us are concerned about with regard to the Foxconn development is the sheer amount of impervious surface that it represents, and certainly wetlands destruction. What can we do as a community to encourage and convince the developers to be innovative about landscaping, about pavement, about water movement in and through the development? How can we influence that conversation?
That's a great question. That's a great question. It's an important question. Certainly, there's been a lot of discussion about the permitting around wetlands that was made easier for Foxconn and the enabling legislation. And I would have preferred that the current law or the previous law remain in place for this. But the one opportunity that is there right now, if a development is authorized to remove or fill in a wetland, they have to replace it every acre. I believe it's 1.6 acres they have to replace it with a new one. The trade-off in this bill was for the Foxconn project, for every acre they fill in, they have to replace it with 2 acres. So the restoration wetlands are a higher ratio. Restoration wetlands are never as good as original ones. But a question to pose as we move forward on it is, well, where are those restoration wetlands going to go? Are they going to be in the same watershed? Are they going to be nearby? Can we ask questions to make sure that that the runoff that may occur is going to have not only the adequate retention ponds, but put us in a place where we're not adding to, you know, what's called the runoff pollution or the non-point pollution, which is as difficult a political task to get at as any of the environmental issues we face. So I don't know that we're there yet. I mean, the interesting thing about Foxconn is when they talk about what exactly it's going to look like, the plans will often change in terms of where exactly it's going to be. But I think having those community conversations is going to be important. And I think we're all going to need to engage in those conversations with the county, with Mount Pleasant. You know, the city has a role to play in as much that we'll be putting water infrastructure from a water utility standpoint, but in terms of the layout, those are all really important questions to ask. I wish I could say, here's the name and number of the person you should call about that. But I think broadly, you know, as people want to have conversations about that, I think convening community meetings and asking those questions and bringing expertise to the table is probably a good way to begin to have those community dialogues.
I'm glad you mentioned the idea of expertise, because you know very well that in Racine we have a robust and vital environmental community. And a lot of us would like to hear what your visions for the future are for Racine from an environmental standpoint. You know, we're a bird city. Mm-hmm. And we do all kinds of things that are sometimes, above and beyond what other cities do.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's an exciting question. I mean, I think it's impossible to talk about the city of Racine and the environment and not mention water, right? I mean, it's such a, you know, I mean, the lake is such an identifying part. I mean, I think in other parts of the world, they think about where north is, but in Racine, you sort of always know where east is because right. of the lake. And we've got this great river that's underappreciated that runs through town, the Root River, that creates some real opportunities. I think how we redevelop our waterfront that's in the city is going to be a great opportunity not only for economic development, but for improving the water quality of the river and the lakefront if we do it smart, if we use green infrastructure, if we do some of the sort of the smart city and sustainability models that you're seeing in other communities. We're getting people, because of the Foxconn announcement, looking in Racine to do redevelopment on big sites in a way that we just didn't hear from before the Foxconn announcement. So even though the facility will be out by the interstate, people are looking nearby and thinking, wow, there's a lot of waterfront in Racine that could be redeveloped. Well, how that occurs and the quality of what you put in place and making sure, as you mentioned, you know, impervious pavement and, you know, do you talk about green roofs and do you talk about runoff pollution as you're redesigning that, creates an immense opportunity. And then the other thing that you're going to hear discussion of as we move forward is is climate and carbon use, and what can we as a city do to align ourselves with the goals of the Paris Accord and think strategically as a big consumer of electricity and carbon. How can we minimize our carbon footprint, and how can we put policies in place that encourage people within the community to reduce their carbon footprint as well? There's an amazing opportunity, I think, in place to do that. Like all things, it's just sort of like, well, how are you going to pay for that? But I think we're learning more and more that investments in clean technology ultimately wind up saving taxpayers money, creating jobs, and helping to save the planet as we reduce our carbon footprint. So those are the two areas of focus that I'll be talking about most is water as it pertains to improving development, but also the quality of our waters around Lake Michigan and the Root River, and really moving the ball forward on climate and carbon consumption, because we all have to do our part if we're going to really address the changes that are coming down the pike as it comes to climate. As I know, we're preparing for a blizzard tomorrow, so it's maybe not the eve of the best day to think about global warming and climate change, but these things are real and they're happening, and every part of the country and frankly the world has to do their part to reduce our carbon footprint if we want to be good stewards for our children and our grandchildren and the world that they'll inherit.
You know, when you mention water, it strikes me that just, you know, a handful of years ago, not even, the city of Racine was awarded with a very high water quality standard. And you hear in the news just about every day yet another water supply tainted with lead. How is it that the city of Racine was able to achieve this extremely important thing while other cities are having such difficulties?
Oh, it's a great question. Under the category of things you learn when you're a mayor is not only about, you know, your public works department and snow plows and garbage removal, but just really how impressive and important your water and wastewater utilities are. In Racine, we've invested quite a bit to make sure that we've got we do have lead infrastructure, and every time we rip up a street, we replace the lead mains that go through or line them so that the water isn't coming in contact with lead. We put a coating in the water so that lead pipes don't have it breaking down. We've acquired funding so that when we rip up roads, we can replace the lead laterals that go into people's homes. So we've got a plan in place to remove that infrastructure over time, but we've also done a lot of work to make sure that that we're minimizing and hopefully eliminating the impact of lead pipes as it relates to public health. The far greater risk, and to be clear, there's no safe level of lead for children. It's not like if it's low enough, it's just fine. I mean, as a goal, we need to replace that infrastructure as we go along. And this is where federal and state funding becomes really important, because the state actually doesn't allow us in on our own to just assess fees to ratepayers to replace it all at once. And so, you know, there's changes coming down the pike that may give the water utility more flexibility around that. And if we have it, we certainly want to use it. When it comes to lead, though, in Racine, the far greater risk to public health as it relates to lead is from lead paint in older homes. I mean, that's really where we have to give as much focus. So we have to do the work that we need to do to replace our lead pipe infrastructure. But in terms of the point of contact for city residents that are dealing with it, it's usually in older homes that have that sort of the cracking paint chips that I'm told actually taste very sweet. And so kids might pull at it. And when you do that, it creates lead poisoning for children in particular, which can have a real impact on brain development and cognitive health. So we have to do both. We have to talk about our water infrastructure and reduce the impacts of lead in the water supply. And the water utility is doing a good job of replacing that infrastructure as we go. I'd like to move it faster, just because, again, there is no safe level of lead consumption for human use, particularly for children. But the more, if we're trying to remove lead from the built environment that people have, it's really in our housing stock. That's a lot of it was built before 1978, which is when they stopped putting lead in paint. And so we have a number of houses where if people are going to be exposed to lead, it's far more likely to come from the paint in the house than it is the tap. So it's a real concern, and you have to do both.
Speaking of water, what are your primary concerns regarding Waukesha and the diversion of water?
Yeah, I continue to be concerned about this. This is one of these issues where, you know, you work on it for years as a legislator. I was one of the authors of the Great Lakes Compact during my first legislative session when it passed. And the idea was, certainly what we thought we had passed would have not allowed adverse impacts to a river. We're going to continue to have discussions about what the discharge into the Root River looks like. I mean, it's certainly cheaper and easier for Waukesha to dump millions of gallons of treated sewage into the Root River every day, but I'm still not at all convinced that that's not going to have a real negative impact on the river as it relates to emerging pollutants or temperature or the increased flow and how that's going to, you know, bring up a lot of old sedimentation that has pollution in it. We just don't have the assurances that I think we need that Waukesha's discharge isn't going to have negative impacts on the health of the river. And that's critical as we're spending millions of dollars trying to redevelop our riverfront and lakefront to simultaneously being to have having a battle with an upstream community that want to basically dump their treated sewage into the river is a problem. And so this is years in the making before they will get a discharge permit. So there's a number of conversations to have. And my hope is that they could, my own opinion is if they're going to buy the water from Milwaukee, I just assume that they return the water to Milwaukee through MMSD. I mean, I know it's cheaper for them to build a shorter pipeline and just send it down our way, but it is nothing but a liability, in my opinion, to receive those waters. And you'll have times in drier parts of the year where they're estimating 65-70% of the water could be the discharge coming from Waukesha. And I have real concerns about what that'll mean for the health of the river.
Right, right. Nan, a couple more quick questions as our time hurtles away.
I don't know if I should ask you this or not. Would you envision a council on the environment made up of people from our community?
So there is a council on the environment that is doing good work in the community. There's a community, a group called Green and Greater Racine, and Visioning Greater Racine has incorporated them as one of what they call their action teams. The great part about these conversations we've been having about water quality or that we've been having around climate and carbon consumption is there's already a great group of people that are doing amazing work that have begun to sort of figure out what our energy baseline is and what sort of conservation things we can do in people's homes versus their businesses, what the city can do to reduce its carbon footprint. The great thing about this topic, I mean, I'd love to sort of come into office and act as though I was the only person who ever thought about doing these things. But the reality is there's a lot of good work that's come before me, and particularly around the environment when it comes to both water and climate. There's a really great network of people who are already meeting regularly and doing things that they can do themselves as a nonprofit and a group of nonprofits, but also partnering with the city and other entities. So the great part about this is I don't have to sort of invent that. It exists in our community. I mean, you said earlier, we do have a good and robust environmental community here locally with several organizations doing really good work. And that makes moving these things forward much easier and, frankly, a real reflection of the will of the people that you represent. I mean, you go to meet with people and there's dozens of people that are already engaged and excited and, you know, doing annual fairs up at the Racine campus, a big gateway to talk about these things. There's an exciting and robust environmental community in Racine that I'm really thrilled to draw upon to do some good work.
Quickly, the EPA announced the possibility that Racine County might be designated as not meeting federal air standard quality standards. So I assume that's something you're watching very, very carefully. Can you tell us anything about that?
Sure. I mean, it looks as though all the communities along Lake Michigan are no longer going to be in attainment. I think Kenosha gets looked at a little bit differently because it gets lumped into the Chicago market.
Right.
But pretty much all the counties along Lake Michigan are no longer in air attainment. There's this debate happening right now between the EPA and the Wisconsin DNR about what to do about it. One of them sort of has an opinion that it's not that big of a deal, which I have concerns about because that air quality leads to, you know, real public health concerns around asthma, particularly for children, and human health. But this is one of these issues that you have to monitor and be concerned about. But it's also one of these things that I'm realizing, you know, if I were still the ranking member on the Environment and Forestry Committee in the legislature, this is the sort of thing that you'd want to have a hearing on and a real robust discussion with the DNR about what are you going to do to enforce it. On an issue like that, this is an area where the mayor now plays more of a supporting role, where you raise your concerns and make them known to policymakers. But ultimately, how the DNR enforces that action is going to be decided by the governor and the legislature and not the local mayor. So deeply concerned about it, have real concerns on its impact on human health, particularly for children. But it's where my new role is different when it comes to those issues. But I don't, as a general rule, think a good reaction to environmental concerns raised is to simply raise the level of what we think is acceptable.
Right.
You know, as a general rule, I think if you got a mess, you should really clean it up. Air quality becomes more difficult because some of it comes from other states, right? So it's not necessarily something that Racine itself is producing or the communities along Lake Michigan are producing the pollution that we're now dealing with. So that makes getting at it a more difficult issue, which is why I think we need more of a federal response than a state response. But nonetheless, it needs to be an adequate response because the impacts of this are real.
Right. But air pollution doesn't understand state boundaries or
it doesn't.
County boundaries.
It really doesn't.
It goes where it goes.
Yeah.
Right. 30 seconds. Have you given any advice to your successor in Madison, namely Greta Neubauer?
I mean, Greta's already doing great. I mean, she's going to do a fantastic job. I mean, I had the real privilege of her working in my legislative office before she ran, so I know her well and think she'll do great work. You know, she's got her own experience working on climate and running a nonprofit, you know, looking to address climate change in a real way. So she's another great community asset to begin to talk about these things. But she, you know, loves the community deeply, and it's not her first day in the building, right? She's worked there before, and so she knows sort of the idiosyncrasies and culture around the building. And I talked to my friend Todd Onstead, who's a rep down here, who says, at least according to him, she's doing great already. So and the only advice that I would give her is, you know, she'll stay true to her values and work hard on representing the community. But she's going to cut her own path, too. She'll find her own way that'll be in some ways different than mine, and I think that's great.
Wow. Well, Racine Mayor Corey Mason, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you here. Thank you so much for being part of the morning show. We look forward to having you back.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Very best wishes to you. Thank you again. Nan, anything you want to tell us about going on in Southeast Wisconsin?
Well, my goodness, there's always something going on. Riverbend Nature Center, their sugaring off pancake breakfasts begin March 4th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and they continue every Sunday through March. Breakfast is followed by a hike to observe and learn the process of sap collection and syrup production, which is amazing. They're tapping an enormous amount of trees. Tickets are available at the door, and they are $8. Pringle Nature Center is having a Valentine's candlelight hike on February 10th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Snowshoes will be provided if the weather, you know, cooperates with us, which it looks like it will. There will be a crackling fire, and refreshments will be provided. And Richard Bong State Recreational Area, Return to Romance, February 10th, 7 to 9 p.m. You'll enjoy a candlelight walk, fine homemade desserts, warm drinks, and a fire with live music provided by Wild Time, $15 per couple, $8 per person, adults only. And that's it.
All right.
That's great.
Nan Calvert, thank you again, and thank you for bringing along with you Racine Mayor Corey Mason. This
You're
was an exciting
welcome. Thanks,
day.
Thanks, Mayor Mason.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Tomorrow on the morning show, Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli and several members of the Carthage Choir just back from an exciting tour of Europe where they visited Budapest, Rome, and Venice, among other great cities. Their homecoming concert is coming up on Sunday afternoon. And on Monday, I'll be having three librarians from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside Library talking about the current Big Read Project, which is the book Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. And you'll hear my conversation with the author on Wednesday's morning show.